TV Bible Study is a serious effort to study in depth every word of God. Each 30-minute lesson has been carefully arranged to assist you with your study of God's Word. And now for your TV Bible Study teacher, Richard Rogers.
We want to welcome you again to TV Bible Study. We're in a study of the Divided Kingdom, and it's lesson 44. We just finished one of the most graphic periods of corruption in all the history of the world. As we studied the life of Ahab and all the evil influence he had not only in the nation of Israel with his wife Jezebel, but also in the nation of Judah by the marriage of his daughter Athaliah to Jehoram, the son of Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah. I want you to look here briefly at a chart that covers all of the kings of this period, the second period of division. This is the period of Jehu. On the chart, you'll see that over in Judah's land, the first ruler is a woman usurper. God never recognizes her, and her 6 years are not really counted in the reign of the kings. But she does rule. She does usurp the throne for 6 years, and we'll study how when we get to her line. But then the line of David is again traced through Joash, who reigned 40 years, Amaziah, who reigned 29 years, and Uzziah, who reigned 52 years, the longest reign in Judah's land and the second longest reign of any king in either Israel or Judah. During that same period of time, in Israel, we have five kings, Jehu and four after him, his son, his grandson, his great-grandson, his great-grandson. Jehu ruled 28 years, Jehoahaz ruled 17 years, Jehoash 16 years, Jeroboam, we'll call him Jeroboam II, to keep him separated from Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, ruled 41 years. He is the most prosperous king of all of Israel's time. And Zechariah, his son, ruled only 6 months. And we'll find out why when we study Zechariah. Now let's look at these kings one at a time. Because really the study of history is the study of people. A lot of people find history dull. And I think the reason for that is some history teachers teach as if the important thing were dates and things. Dates and things are incidental. The important thing is people and the things that happened to them and why they happened to them. That we might learn the lesson of imitating the good in their life and refusing to follow the wicked. The first king that we'll study is Jehu. I called him in the last lesson that we studied together, the fast chariot driver. And I want you to see why he's called that in the study today. In 2 Kings chapter 9, we pick up the story of Jehu. As Jehu will not only be the king of Israel, but he'll also be the agent of God in destroying all of Ahab's house. Elisha, the prophet, is going to call one of the sons of the prophets and send him to destroy, to anoint Jehu to destroy the house of Ahab. Start with me in 2 Kings 9, verse 1. And Elisha the prophet called one of the sons of the prophets and said unto him, gird up thy loins and take the vial of oil in thy hand and go to Ramoth-Gilead. And when thou comest thither, look out there Jehu, the son of Jehoshaphat, son of Nimshi, and go in and make him arise from among his brethren, carry him to the inner chamber, and he goes on to tell him to anoint him. He comes in verse 5 and says to the captain of the host, I have an errand for thee, O captain. And in verse 6 and following, he does exactly what God has told him to do. He anoints in verse 6 Jehu to be king. Read that with me. He arose and went into the house, and he poured oil on his head. And he said unto him, thus saith Jehovah, the God of Israel, I have anointed thee king over the people of Jehovah, even over Israel. And thou shalt smite, now notice what he commands him to do as king. And that verse 7, and thou shalt smite the house of Ahab thy master, that thou may avenge the blood of my servants, the blood of the prophets, and the blood of all the servants of Jehovah at the hand of Jezebel. For the whole house of Ahab shall perish. And I will cut off from Ahab every man-child, him that is shut up and him that's left large in Israel. And I'll make the house of Ahab like the house of Jeroboam the son of Nebat, like the house of Baasha the son of Ahijah. And the dogs shall eat Jezebel in the portion of Jezreel. and there should be none to bury her. And he opened the door and fled. He must look like a crazy man. I mean, he came in, he separated Jehu, he talked to him briefly, he opened the door of the tent and ran. Now, Jehu's life as king now will be divided into three points. Look at them with me. Number one, he will smite Ahab's house in 2 Kings chapter 9. And in Jezebel's case, she'll go from deity to dog's dung. In the second place, he will slay Ahab's sons in 2 Kings 10, verses 1 to 17. And in the third place, he will slaughter all the worshipers of Baal in 2 Kings 18 to 36. His work is bloody work. He will smite Ahab's house. He will slay Ahab's sons. He will slaughter all of the worshipers of Baal. And all of that by God's command. And all of that by God's approval. Now let's look at those one at a time. In verse 11 of 2 Kings 9, Jehu goes back to his servants, and his servants ask him, "Is all well? Wherefore has this mad fellow come to us?" He said to them, "You know what the man was and what his talk was?" And they said, "It's false. Tell us now." And he says, "Thus and thus he spake unto me." And when they said that, when they heard that he'd been anointed king over Israel, notice what they do, verse 13. Then they hasted and took every man his garment and put it under him on the top of the stairs and blew the trumpet, saying, "Jehu is king." Now immediately he begins his work. He was told by God that what I want you to do is smite Ahab's house. Watch him do it. Verse 14. So Jehu, the son of Jehoshaphat, the son of Nimshi, conspired against Joram. Latter part of verse 15. And Jehu said, "If this be your man, then let none escape. Go forth out of the city and go tell it in Jezreel." So Jehu rode in a chariot and went to Jezreel. And Joram lay there. He was sick. And Ahaziah, king of Judah, was come down to see Joram. Now Ahaziah, as we've already studied, was a wicked king. Jehoram was a wicked king. God gets them both together in one city so that Jehu can kill them both in the same day and not have far to travel. Now as he travels toward the city of Jezreel, a watchman is keeping watch upon the tower. Read with me, starting in verse 17. The only way we can do this is read it. And the watchman was standing on the tower in Jezreel, and he spied the company of Jehu as he came, and said, "I see a company." And Joram said, "Take a horseman and send to meet them, and that let them say, 'Is it peace?'" So they went out on horseback, a man to meet him, and said, "Is it peace?" And Jehu says, "What have I had to do with peace? Turn behind me." And the watchman told him, saying, "The messenger came to them, but he doesn't come back." Verse 19. Sent out a second on horseback and said, "Thus saith the king, is it peace?" And Jehu answers, "What is thou to do with peace? Turn thee behind me." The watchman said, "He came even unto them, and he cometh not back. And the driving is like the driving of Jehu, the son of Nimshi, for he driveth furiously." He has a lot of kinsmen on the expressways today, doesn't he? No, the idea is that this man is the number one chariot driver in all of Israel. He is the finest warrior. So Joram has reason to be afraid of him. So Joram gets his army ready, gets in his chariot, and goes out to meet Jehu. And he asks Jehu in chapter 9 of 2 Kings in verse 10, "Is it peace, Jehu?" Jehu says, "What peace? So long as the whoredoms of thy mother Jezebel and her witchcrafts are so many." And Jehu and Joram turned his hand and fled and said to Ahaziah, "There's treachery, Ahaziah, there's treachery." That's really something. I mean, here's one of the guys most expert in treachery in all the world. Now I'm crying out there's treachery against him. Verse 24. Jehu drew his bow with his full strength and smote Joram between his arms. And the arrow went out of his heart. He sank down in his chariot and died. And they carried him to Naboth's vineyard again, to the valley of Jezreel, where Naboth's vineyard is, and his blood ran out of the chariot, and dogs licked his blood. Ahaziah, in verse 27, sees that there's treachery, and he turns to flee. And Jehu chases him to Megiddo and slays him there. And they carry him back to Jerusalem and bury him in a sepulcher with his father. So in one day, Jehu has brought to an end Ahab's house by the slaughter of Jehoram and the reign of Ahaziah in Judah. Jehu then goes into the city of Jezreel to kill Jezebel. God has told him, "I want the entire family of Ahab smitten." In verse 30 of 2 Kings 9, Here is one graphic story. When Jehu was come to Jezreel, Jezebel heard of it, and she painted her eyes and tired her head and looked out at the window. She's not trying to seduce him. She's old. And also notice what she says in verse 31. And as Jehu entered in at the gate, she said, "Is it peace, thou Zimri, thy master's murderer?" To call a man Zimri in Israel is like calling him Benedict Arnold in America. Traitor, renegade, and rebel. Why'd she get all dressed up then? For her burial. She got ready for the funeral. She wanted people to be able to look at her funeral and see her in all of her royal regalia, all of her makeup, all of her riches, and all of her diamonds, and say, "Oh, that's Jezebel." She looks out the window, and Jehu says, "Is there anybody on my side?" And two or three eunuchs looked out. He said, "Throw her down." And they threw her down. And her blood was sprinkled upon the wall and upon the horses. And he trod her beneath the feet of her horse, of his horse. In verse 30, she's now no good-looking lady. In verse 34, "And when he was come in, he did eat and drink. And he said, 'See now to this cursed woman and bury her, for she's a king's daughter.'" She's not worthy of any honor on her own. But she's Jezebel's daughter. And as a king's daughter, she's worthy of the honor of a good burial. Verse 35, "They went to bury her. But when they found no more, but they found no more of her than the skull." I think that may be because in that skull was the brains that hatched all the foul plots that had doomed Israel. And the feet that had been swift to go to the place where blood was shed. And the palms that had held the Baal worshippers in them. None of those were eaten. Wherefore they came back and told him. And he said, "This is the word of the Lord which he spake by his servant Elijah the Tishbite." This is verse 36. "In the portion of Jezreel shall the dogs eat the flesh of Jezebel." Notice 37. "And the body of Jezebel shall be dung upon the face of the field in the portion of Jezreel, so that they shall not say, 'This is Jezebel.'" You want to find Jezebel? Follow the dogs. And wherever the dogs excrete, point at the dung and say, "This is Jezebel." That's the final end of trusting in anything other than God. Payday for Jezebel and Ahab's house. In 2 Kings 10, you have the second point. As he kills Ahab's sons. Ahab has 70 sons, which would indicate to me he had more wives than Jezebel. He has 70 sons in Samaria. And Jehu wrote letters to the people that kept the city and said, "I don't want to fight your city. Deliver to me the heads of the 70 sons of Ahab." And they brought into him in baskets 70 heads and laid them out before him and said, "Here are the sons of Ahab." And he says, "Maybe I'm wicked because I've slain my master's son that reigned and I've slain his wife. But who slew these 70? Surely you now share with me in whatever wickedness that is to be found in the destruction of Ahab's house." But he's not through. Beginning in verse 12 and going all the way through the rest of chapter 10 of 2 Kings, he has all the Baal worshipers gathered together in the house of Baal. He says, "Make sure that we invite all of the worshipers of Baal." Ahab has sacrificed to Baal a little. Jehu's going to sacrifice to Baal of God a lot. Jehu wasn't a righteous man. He's not above deceit. He says, "Get all the worshipers of Baal together. I want to do a great job of worshiping Baal." And all the people fill the house. They had an attendance drive, and I mean they filled the church building. And Jehu says, "Make sure that there's no worshipers of God here. You make sure that there's no worshipers of Jehovah here. We don't want anybody but the true worshipers of Baal here." And as soon as they got all the worshipers of God out, he charged his men keeping the doors, and he said, "You don't let anybody escape. If anybody escapes, you will answer for them. And then he sent his soldiers into the house, and they killed every worshiper of Baal. He's killed Jehoram. He's killed Jezebel. He's had the 70 sons of Ahab slain, and he's slain all the worshipers of Baal. So he's a righteous man, isn't he? No, he didn't do it because he's righteous. He didn't do it because God wanted it done. Look at verse 29 of chapter 10. Howbeit, from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, wherewith he made Israel to sin, Jehu departed not from after them to wit the golden calf that were in Bethlehem and Dan. So Jehu didn't do God's will because it was God's will. He did it because he wanted to establish his empire. And yet Jehovah said to him in verse 30 and 31, because you've done my will in destroying Ahab's house, I will have your sons of the fourth generation sit on the throne of Israel. Jehoahaz, Jehoash, Jeroboam, Zechariah. That might indicate why Zechariah reigned only 6 months. Because all of those were wicked men. And finally God said, at last I don't have to keep my word. And Zechariah is the last of Jehu's sons set upon the throne. I wish we had time to cover all the kings in that kind of a detail, but we don't, so let's hurry on. There's Jehu. He smote Ahab's house. He slew Ahab's sons. He slaughtered Ahab's congregation, the Baal worshippers. Athaliah is the daughter of Ahab and Jezebel, and she must be dealt with. If Ahab's house is to be swept away as one sweeps away dung till it all be gone, then Athaliah must also meet her death. And we read of that in 2 Kings chapter 11. Athaliah was covered well in the third lesson of this series. As we talked about the fact that God had preserved the seed throughout all of time, we talked about that here was a time that the devil used a wicked woman to try to destroy the seed through which God intended to bless the world. We'll look at Athaliah's life in 3 points. We'll look at her slaughter of all the seed royal. We'll look at the fact that she was slain by the people. And we'll look at the fact that she was succeeded by another son of David, Joash. In 2 Kings 11, start reading with me with verse 1. Now when Athaliah, the mother of Ahaziah, saw that her son was dead, she arose and destroyed all the seed royal. But Jehosheba, the daughter of King Joram, sister of Ahaziah, took Joash, the son of Ahaziah, and stole him away from the king's sons that were slain, even him and his nurse, and put them in the bedchamber, and hid him from Athaliah, so that he was not slain, and he was with her hid in the house of Jehovah 6 years. And Athaliah reigned over the land. So we find out in this text that she tried, or the devil tried, through her, to destroy the seed through whom which Christ would come. And she almost did it. She would have done it, except Jehosheba hid a little boy 1 year old. Athaliah was not at all a lady to be admired. And so in the book, in 2 Chronicles, we read in, I'm trying to remember what it is, 2 Chronicles 23, we read of the great detail of how finally the people got tired of all of Athaliah's sins and all of Athaliah's oppression upon them, but they were in deep despondency because there was no son of David to rule. So they thought God had cursed them and that God no longer considered them to be the people of God. But then Jehosheba took a boy 7 years old, Joash by name, to Jehoiada the priest and said, here is a son of David, Joash. And Jehoiada showed him before the people, and the people were thrilled. Now they have an excuse. Now they have a reason. Now they have a purpose for killing Athaliah. And Athaliah, although she lays hold on the horns of the altar in the temple for refuge, is taken out and slain. And the people establish Joash to be the king. And great joy fill the people's heart again, because they have a great, they have another son of David upon the throne. And Joash begins to reign. And we'll study his life in 2 Chronicles chapter 24 under 3 points. We're not going to take the time to read the text. You read the text. Joash's life is simple. He does right as long as the priests control him, as long as Jehoiada lives. First 14 verses of chapter 24. He does wrong when he's ruled by the princes, when the priests die in verses 15 to 24, and he dies at the hands of the people. Joel prophesied during his time, and if you'll read the book of Joel, it is a time when the people are guilty of religious apostasy. So Joash started out good, and as long as the priests live for the first 15 or 20 years of his life, he does well. But when the priest dies, he does evil and falls away from God. Jehu's sons reign in Israel during this time. Jehoahaz rules for 17 years, and Jehoahaz is a very wicked man. However, he calls on God. It is amazing to me the way the Bible teaches the grace of God. In 2 Kings chapter 13, Jehoahaz is defeated by Syria, the king of Hazael. He calls upon God. He prays that God will deliver him. And God temporarily delivers him, and he's victorious over Syria. And he goes right back and bows down to the calves of Jeroboam, son of Nebat. It is an amazing testimony to the stupidity and the sinful nature of man, that even when man is delivered by God, as 2 Kings 13, 1-9 would show Jehoahaz is, he still does wicked. In 2 Kings 13, 10-25, Jehoash, his son reigns. Only really one thing here, but we'll put it in 2 points. He visits Elisha when the prophet is dying in 2 Kings 13, beginning with verse 10. And the prophet tells him to take his arrows and shoot them into the air, and he does so. Then he says, take your bow and smite the ground. And he smites the ground 3 times, and he quits. And that makes Elisha mad. Elisha said, if you would continue to smote till I told you to quit, you would have totally defeated Syria. But because you smote only 3 times, you'll only defeat them 3 times. I remember when I was a boy wondering, how in the world do you know to smite it more than 3 times? Then it dawned on me. When God says smite, you smite till God says quit. You know, he didn't say don't smite 3 times. He didn't say smite 4 times. He says hit. Whenever God tells me to hit a lick, I am to hit it until God says quit it. And then I'll be victorious. If I stop because I'm tired, if I stop because I trust my own wisdom, if I stop for any reason at all, I'm saying simply that I really do not trust in God. I really do not rely upon him for my victory. So Jehoash shows again the lesson we've seen again and again and again. Trust God completely for all of his will. Amaziah reigns in Judah. You can find this in 2 Chronicles 25. Amaziah is one of those fellows, according to 2 Chronicles 25, verses 1 to 4, that does right, but not with a perfect heart. Has 3 points in his life. That's the first one. He does right, but not with a perfect heart. He goes down and he defeats Edom, 2 Chronicles 25, 15 to 16. But then he takes Edom's God's home to worship. I cannot understand that. I can understand, in a way, a man going down and defeating a nation, are being defeated by a nation and bowing down to their gods. Because he may think that their gods are more powerful than his. But Amaziah went down and by the help of God defeated Edom and then took their gods home to worship. The only way I can explain that is, again, that pull of lust. Because all the gods of the pagans appealed to the sexual immorality of man. Because of that, he warred against Jehoash, the king of Israel, and was defeated. He sent up to Jehoash this message. He said, I want my daughter to marry your son. And Jehoash sent back this message. Said, will the thistle marry the cedar? Said, you've trodden down the thistle of Edom and think that you're pretty good. Leave me alone. Keep your nose down in your business and you don't bother me. But Amaziah was lifted up in his pride, went and fought against Jehoash and was defeated. Jeroboam II ruled Israel at this time. In 2 Kings 14, 23-29, you'll read of that. Very little is said of it. And yet, but enough is said to make us know that he is the most powerful and most prosperous king Israel ever had. I want you to turn to 2 Kings 14. Let's start reading with verse 23. We'll read very quickly because we don't have much time left. In the 15th year of Amaziah, the son of Joash, king of Judah, Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel, began to reign in Samaria. Verse 24, he did that which was evil in the sight of Jehovah. He departed not from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, wherewith he made Israel to sin. Verse 25, he restored the border of Israel from the entrance of Hamath and the sea of the Arabah, according to the word of Jehovah, the God of Israel, which he spake by his servant Jonah, the son of Amittai, the prophet, who was of Gath-Hepher. And so Jonah was the prophet of Jeroboam, but he extended the borders all the way back to their promised limit. He gave great prosperity. Amos and Hosea prophesied during the reign of Jeroboam II. And if you'll read those books, the number one thing that they condemned Israel for was their ease, idleness, and luxury. They didn't know how to handle wealth. For every man that can handle wealth, I can find you 1,000 that can handle poverty. It's a whole lot easier to be righteous poor than it is to be righteous rich. because riches are so easy to trust in. And the things and the pleasure of this world are so easy to enjoy. While Jeroboam is ruling Israel, Uzziah is ruling Judah. You read of that in 2 Chronicles 26. Uzziah was as powerful as Jeroboam was. And he, four things will define his life. He'll put down his enemies. He'll promote husbandry. He'll pervert the temple. He'll die a leper. You'll read all of that in 2 Chronicles 26. He starts out a great man and ends up a weak man. Again, prosperity ruined him. He put out all of his enemies. He defeated his enemies from the Sea of the Arabah, which is the Dead Sea, all the way down to the river of Egypt. He restored the promised limits to the south. Israel again lives in all the promised land. Jeroboam extended it north, and Uzziah extended it south. He promoted husbandry, which we've studied under Solomon. It was one of Solomon's contributions, and yet also somewhat of a dangerous thing, as he changed the emphasis from agricultural to commercial. He took away the real backbone of the people, their agricultural farm emphasis. I don't know why he did it, but he presumed to go into the holy place, the most holy place, and offer their sacrifice to God. And because he did that, he was smitten a leper and died a leper in his own infirmary. A great man. I mean, a person that walked according to the ways of David and sought God with all of his heart, defeated all of his enemies, promoted great prosperity in the land, and yet he lifted up in pride and broke the law of God. God is interested in his word being kept in absolute detail and in accuracy. Only the priest, only the high priest, had a right into that holy place. Uzziah dies outside of fellowship with God because he was lifted up in his pride. Pride goes before destruction. A haughty spirit goes before a fall. In 2 Kings 15, verses 8 to 12, Zechariah, the last king of Israel, reigns only 6 months. And finally, God is able to end his promise to Jehu. Read with me in 2 Kings 15, verse 10. And Shallum, the son of Jabez, conspired against him and smote him before the people, and slew him, and reigned in his stead. Now the rest of the acts of Zechariah, behold, they are written in the book of the Chronicles of the King of Israel. This was the word of Jehovah which he spake unto Jehu. Thy sons of the fourth generation shall sit upon the throne of Israel. And so it came to pass. If we're faithful, God abides faithful. If we are faithless, God abides faithful. For he cannot deny himself. All the sons of Jehu were with you, yet God kept his word. God will keep your word, keep his word to you, and give you peace if you'll believe in him.
Seek ye first the kingdom of God, and his righteousness.
These lessons are available on video cassette tapes for use with video cassette players or TV station broadcasting. Audio cassette tapes are also available. This systematic study of the Bible was designed for a variety of uses. Teacher training programs, substitute teacher needs, community Bible study programs on local TV, and hospital closed circuit programs, to mention a few. God bless your study of his word.